We had a lively interest in whatever the administration was doing with respect to church and state.
This is something that we fought hard for.
Religious liberty is one of the hallmarks and part of the bedrock of American democracy.
We at the BJC like to say when anyone's religious liberty is threatened, everyone's religious liberty is at risk.
Hello, and welcome to the Baptist Joint Committee podcast. I'm Christine Browder, the Associate Director of Mobilization here at the BJC. On this episode, I'll be talking with the Reverend Pastor Charlie Johnson of Pastors for Texas Children. Welcome, Charlie.
Good to be here, Christine. Glad to be with you.
Thanks. Charlie is in Washington this week for Public Schools Week, which is an effort led by several national organizations to support strong public schools across the nation. Religious liberty and public schools can often intertwine, which we'll speak about in this episode. Charlie, my first question for you is, what led you to organize this group in 2013? Talk to us a little bit about the genesis of Pastors for Texas Children, Pastors for Children.
You bet. I was leading Broadway Baptist Church at the time. The year was 2008, the fall of 2008, when I received a call from Susie Painter. I was interim pastor at Broadway. And I received a call from Susie Painter, who at that time was director of the Christian Life Commission of the Baptist General Convention of Texas, went on to be the executive director, the coordinator of the Baptist, of the Cooperative Baptist Fellowship, of course, wonderful Christian leader, and now co-director at Pastors for Texas
right.
Children.
So,
but Susie said, Charlie, would you represent Texas Baptist in public education advocacy, being a pastor that wanted to serve his family? I said, yes. And Susie gave me some instruction, and represented the BGCT on a coalition called the Coalition for Public Schools, and learned that there are forces that are trying to dismantle public education. Well, I didn't believe the people telling me that, so I said, give me a list of those Senate and House members.
Mm-hmm.
I want to go visit them myself and have a conversation with them myself. And the first several visits, I walked in the senator's office and said, I'm Charles Johnson. I'd like to talk to the senator about public education.
Mm-hmm.
You could hear the off button just click. And totally dismissed, and a time or two demeaned, ignored.
Mm-hmm.
Leave your material. I'll make sure the senator gets it.
Yep.
So I walked back to the rotunda, and I had a little conversation with the Lord. And back to my spirit came this response. Son, you don't represent public schools. You don't know anything about them. You don't know what a classroom teacher goes through. You're
yeah.
not trained in that way. You're not knowledgeable. Go back down in that senator's office and tell him who you represent.
Mm-hmm.
Literally, Christine, I walked back in. I'm Charles Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
I lead the Broadway Baptist Church of downtown Fort Worth. I'd like to talk to the senator. Oh, pastor, we're so delighted you're here.
Yep.
Can I get you a cup of coffee? Wait right there. Let me get the senator. She will want to speak with you. And that's when the seeds were planted for Pastors for Children. It took us several years to get implemented, but Pastors for Texas Children was launched in the summer of 2013,
mm-hmm.
right after the legislature cut $5.4 billion, just to confirm this attack on public education,
mm-hmm.
Out of our public education budget. And so we decided we've got to get ministers together. And we've made a big difference, and I'll say more about that later in the episode. But now we have our 501c4. We have our national network, Pastors for Children. We are in Oklahoma, Kentucky, Tennessee, and Mississippi, as well as Texas. And just this week have launched Pastors for Florida Children.
Yeah. Well, that's great. It's been exciting to follow your journey and follow Pastors for Texas Children as it's grown, and there's such energy and momentum behind it. It's exciting, and
praise
we
God.
Certainly do see God's hand at work, certainly. So you work with a lot of faith leaders, and you mentioned this, but you work with a lot of clergy and pastors and faith leaders. How do you find that they're equipped to do advocacy in public schools? And what do they need from you? How does Pastors for Texas Children help equip them to take it to the next level?
It is a great question. And, of course, the Baptist Joint Committee has been leading us in policy advocacy for decades, generations. And we certainly look to y'all as a model and a mentor and an exemplar for our work also. Well, we try to encourage local advocacy and statewide advocacy. Another way to put it is local ministry from the church to the school in ways that honor God's gift of religious liberty, which means that we submit ourselves to the educational leader. We come in as church leaders and submit ourselves to the school leaders and ask, how can we help? And we say humorously, let's keep this, and I'm motioning to my lips shut. Let's don't come in with preaching and praying, and let's don't make the classroom a pulpit.
Yeah.
But with these open, and I'm opening and stretching out my hands in service. And most pastors get that. In our 6 years, we've only had a couple of instances reported back to us where that line was violated, and even in those several instances, the pastors were repentant and cooperative when it was pointed out to them.
Yeah.
And interestingly, Christine, and this is the beauty of what God is doing and in God's gift of religious liberty. I'm thinking of one pastor in Fort Worth who now is one of our lead pastors after he violated that line initially. Now he's close to the superintendent. He understands the brilliance of the two worlds and how there is a line separating the church from the state and that that line should be respected. So it's a beautiful thing.
And it makes both stronger.
It makes both stronger. Both,
and it allows both to thrive from their places.
It does. Experience and expertise. We think the local advocacy is the place to start. We think it's the most important because the classroom teacher, the school principal and the district superintendent love pastors. Love the support of the local church. Please come help us. It's the church people that are reluctant, interestingly,
that is interesting.
Ironically. So those youth ministers, the principals, welcome them to come in to have lunch with their kids and their youth group. Fellowship of Christian Athletes and prayer at the pole before school, student-led and voluntary. We affirm all that. The after-school Kids Hope and Young Life and the after-school religious programs that are voluntary assemblies. And of course, our laws in our great country allow that. And we affirm that. We think if the local faith leader, and it's not just pastors, it's deacons and elders and Sunday school teachers and youth ministers and children's ministers, bishops in some of our liturgical denominations. But if we can do the local advocacy, there is a direct line to the statewide advocacy. Then the pastor starts asking the question, why is this school so underfunded? Why are they having to, these kiddos having to have a bake sale just to pay for basic needs in the classroom? And when she begins asking those questions, then we say, Pastor, will you call your representative? Will you call your senator? And she'll do it then because she's seen up close and personal the needs of the school. So it's a direct line between the local advocacy and the statewide advocacy or ministry and advocacy. But we're trying not to be dualistic about it. In other words, what happens in the local school is just as important as what happens in Austin in the state capitol, or in Little Rock in Arkansas, or in Tallahassee, where I just came from. And one has to do with the other.
Right, certainly both and.
Yeah, it's both and. Yeah. That's a great way to put it. It's not dualistic. It's both and. It's holistic. Someone has said, you know, the church house and the schoolhouse and the state house and your house.
Like
all
that.
Four. Let's get it together.
Yeah.
Let's get it together.
That's a good word. That's a good word. Well, you mentioned the BJC. You've been involved in Baptist life for a long time. How did you first get introduced or connected to the BJC?
Oh, my goodness. Well, I was telling your colleague, Jennifer Hawks, I felt the call to ministry in this beautiful city, Christine. It was the summer of 1977. I was at Mississippi College. I was halfway through my college years. I had just finished my sophomore year, and Bradley Pope, wonderful friend and leader and mentor, Call me in to tell me about a summer internship program sponsored by Riverside Baptist, which is over in the Southwest, and a dynamic, active congregation here in Washington, and St. Dominic's Catholic, a huge Catholic congregation just a couple of blocks away. And they had a summer program. In the morning, we met people in government, and in the afternoon, we operated a day camp for poor children on the housing projects. And it was, I was planning on being a lawyer. I took the internship. I thought Washington would be a cool place to be, but God had other plans. And it wasn't so much the senators and the representatives up on the Hill that captured my imagination as those poor children. And God spoke through those children, and I knew that I was supposed to minister the love of God and the good news of Christ. And came back home and made that decision public before my church and the First Baptist Church of Pensacola. And my pastor, Dr. Jim Plights, just a wonderful pastor, affirmed me. And that has been 42 years ago. I was ordained in the fall of 1980. And here we are, a wonderful career and a wonderful calling. But that summer, as a college student at Mississippi College, part of the that morning program was to come to places like the Baptist Joint Committee. And James Dunn was here, and what a wonderful man. And I, that was my first introduction. And here I guess I've been a pastoral partner with you for all those years.
That's right.
Since then.
That's a good introduction. So James Dunn, legacy certainly.
What a wonderful legacy. And just a great guy. We miss him.
Yeah. Well, so the BJC supports public dollars being used for public schools and are opposed to school vouchers, which often use taxpayer dollars to fund religious education. And so we believe that public schools promote religious liberty, encourage religious diversity that reflects today's society. Can you talk to me a little bit about how Pastors for Texas Children approaches this issue?
Similarly, and I would say again that we certainly as Baptist clergy have been heavily influenced by all of you at the Baptist Joint Committee for throughout our ministries and our leaders that came before us, our forebears. So yes, we believe that public should be public and private private, and we affirm both. So education is a provision of the public good or the common good. Education is a gift from God. It's a universal human right. We see this in the scripture. God brought all the animals to the human to see what the human would call them. That's education, that labeling and classifying and discovering enterprise. God puts the human in a garden because humans get to eat. God brings another human into creation because it's not good for the human to be alone, love, relationship. So we see all this in the biblical story.
Yeah.
And so we believe that education is a basic human right provided by the public. That is a state service, a universal education paid for, as John Adams said in 1785 at the beginning of our republic, by the public, for the public, at the public expense. And not by a charitable individual, but by the public. Conversely, private education is great too. And many of our churches that are in our network and Pastors for Children have church schools. So we're opposed to private school vouchers because of the entanglement and insinuation of government into our church schools. So we're protecting those schools and defending those schools and the integrity of religious liberty and voluntary assembly on one hand, and we're promoting the public provision of the common good on the other hand. And so when we go to our public educators all over the state and now increasingly all over the nation, we find that those superintendents and principals and classroom teachers love private schools also. Of course they do. And oftentimes they will serve both interchangeably. They will go from a public school to a private school, or conversely, from a private school to a public school. By the way, interestingly, and I want our listeners to know this, there is no data to show that private education on the whole is superior to public education. There is no evidence for that.
Yeah.
It's about on par.
Okay.
And those are the best private schools, mm-hmm. $20,000, $25,000, $30,000 per child per year. Public education is ingenious. It takes about $12,000 to $14,000 a year, depending on where you live,
mm-hmm.
to properly educate an American child. Many of our states are below that standard. Mm-hmm. And we need to impress upon our church people, our fellow church members, congregants, and the American people as a whole, the imperative of quality public education. As somebody said, hey, it may take a lot of money, it may cost a lot of money, it may be a big investment, but it costs a whole lot more not to do it in the long run. So private, public, and we endorse and affirm both. That's the reason we're opposed to vouchers. We don't think it's right for public tax dollars dedicated by all of us, we all pay those dollars.
Yep.
Whether you rent or own your home, you're paying those dollars in property tax, gasoline tax, income tax in some states. We think it's wrong to divert those dollars to advance any religious cause. And I always use a sort of a humorous example. Christine, I'm a Baptist. I'm a pretty rock rib Baptist. I sound like a Baptist. I don't believe in the infallibility of the Pope. I don't believe in the veneration of Mary like some of my dear beloved Roman Catholic friends. I don't want my tax dollars supporting those Catholic schools that believe in those doctrines. And you can kind of hear the audience shuffle a little bit. Oh, the preacher's, you know, sort of getting out of bounds. And then I take a pregnant pause and say, any more than our Roman Catholic friends want Baptist schools advancing the doctrine of the priesthood of all believers.
That's right.
Which is something I do believe in. But they don't.
Right.
And their tax dollars should not be allocated to my Baptist church school that's going to teach, you know, individual priesthood. So there's the example, and you could give all kinds of other examples. So it stands to reason. Most people, regardless of party affiliation, certainly regardless of denomination or faith group, and by the way, we have a few imams and more than a few rabbis in our network also. We are a Christian organization, but on the advocacy side especially, and the public school side loves the assistance of any congregation of any faith that will come. Again, keep your I'm zipping my mouth with the motion, keep this closed, hands open, and we can come in with a lot of God's love with that tangible assistance.
Yeah. Well, so on that note, I mean, Charlie, you are such an inspiration to so many pastors and faith leaders across Texas and in states across the country, and you've talked a little bit about encouraging faith leaders and pastors to become advocates. Can you talk a little bit about the specific steps that you ask the pastors and clergy and community faith leaders? What do you ask them to do to become advocates around public education in their local communities?
It's a practical question, a great question. It's very simple. It's easy to say. It's not easy to do, Christine. You've got to talk before you can walk, and we're encouraging faith leaders to just engage. Now, the first step of engagement that we think is important is make an appointment with the principal in your local school, the school closest to where your congregation meets, because your congregation is going to come from every neighborhood in the community. So just choose the school closest to your church. Make an appointment with that principal and submit yourself to him or her. This is very powerful for the pastor of that steeple church, Baptist, Methodist, Catholic, Presbyterian, Church of Christ, Pentecostal, to come in and say to the principal, we're here to help and we really mean it. Now, you may have to have that conversation a half dozen times before the principal knows you mean it. So be steady and durable in your outreach of love. Mm-hmm. Have some longevity about it. Don't just make it a one-time thing. But form that relationship of submission to the principal. She'll understand you mean business. And then what he's going to tell you is, well, school supplies. You start with something simple. Mm-hmm. Teachers spend on average of $1,000 a year out of their own pocket.
Which is crazy.
Now it's crazy.
Right, it is.
These are people only making $45,000 a year. And it's a tax. Mm-hmm. It's a teacher tax. And it's outrageous and unacceptable mm-hmm. that we have it. So we need to change it on the advocacy side, the policy side. Yep. But on the ministry side, let's buy that construction paper and all of those school supplies and all of those art supplies. And what about those preschool teachers who spend so much money on britches at the Walmart for little fellas and gals who have accidents?
Yep.
By the way, when I think about that, I always think about some of our opponents on the other side saying that God has been taken out of our schools. Mm-hmm. And I have immediately the image of that dedicated, godly mm-hmm. preschool teacher bending over a child with love and restoring that child's dignity.
Yep.
As Jesus knelt That's and washed the feet of his disciples.
Not the work of God.
And for a politician to say something so manipulative as God has been taken out of that classroom, it's a sin. Mm-hmm. And we don't allow it on our watch. So school supplies are very important. Secondly, teacher appreciation in all of the wonderful and creative ways that churches can do that.
Yeah.
Through tangible assistance, through real, some churches even provide some livelihood assistance to classroom teachers. Isn't that wonderful? Can you imagine the witness of that church, you know, to gift cards, a $10 Starbucks card. It makes a teacher feel like $1 million, so that we can restore the teacher to the God-given place of esteem that mm-hmm. he deserves, she deserves. Physical, tangible assistance on the facilities. Most of the maintenance budgets of public schools have been slashed, so for the people of the church to come and paint walls and plant gardens and do repair on the facilities, particularly in small towns, is a wonderful, mm-hmm. wonderful thing. Food security. We're now, through the Texas Hunger Initiative, exploring providing the third meal of the day mm-hmm. for poor kids. The public schools, the place where kids get properly fed. Mm-hmm. But those children don't get the evening meal. Mm-hmm. And so we're looking for school folks to come in, always under the authority of the school leader, but for the church folks to come into the school, serve that third meal of the day, fill those backpacks and the backpack program. Many of our churches have the backpack program where those poor children are sent home with nutritious food. So food security is huge. And then lastly, reading partnerships, mentoring, tutoring. It requires an extraordinary commitment. Mm-hmm. But if you'll take a child, and you'll spend an hour or two a week with that child under the direction of the principal and the classroom teacher, reading with that child, coaching that child, character building with that child. It'll give that little human being a real leg up on becoming a successful citizen in the world. So all of that is local church school partnership. And that leads me to the advocacy.
Yep.
When the minister, the deacon, the elder, the Sunday school teacher, the youth minister begins to do that local ministry, that school ministry we call it, she's going to begin asking some probing questions.
Mm-hmm.
Why is this school so underfunded?
Mm-hmm.
Why are these teachers overworked and underpaid? Why the policy to divert the already stretched funds from this school to subsidize private school for affluent kids in Highland Park in Dallas? What's going on here? And that leads that faith leader to pick up the phone, call that House member, call that Senate member, and say three things. We want you to fund our schools. Mm-hmm. We want you to restore this school to the funding level it deserves, because they're doing an incredible job, and because our teachers are overworked and underpaid. Secondly, we want you to cut out this voucher nonsense. It's corrupt. It's wrong. It's a violation. And we want the government to stay out of our church schools, and we want the public dollars that we've paid, mm-hmm. thinking that they go to our neighborhood school. We own this school. Mm-hmm. You don't own it. We own it. These are our schools. And this business of taking money and subsidizing and underwriting the private school is hogwash. Mm-hmm. It's baloney. And we want it to stop. And it has stopped in Texas. Yeah. Governor Abbott has gotten the message. Mm-hmm. Lieutenant Governor Patrick has gotten the message. Last session, it was their number one priority, quote unquote. This session, not a peep, not a syllable. And then the last thing, we want you to get those kids in a quality full day, high quality pre-kindergarten instruction. Because if we can do that, that child will be reading on grade level by third grade. And if she's reading on grade level by third grade, she's going to be a solid citizen in the world. And the data points to that. Yeah. So those three things. And it takes a faith leader. When a pastor makes that call, Christine, and when a pastor takes the extra step of sitting down with that representative or that senator, by the way, he's going to do the talking and they're going to do the listening. And that's the way it ought to be, because they're our public servants. It's a hard job, but they're our servants and not the other way around. Mm-hmm. We're always respectful, and we always have a quality of submission to their God-given leadership and authority. But we're also direct, and we believe that this privatization is a corruption that needs to stop. They make that visit. It's hugely influential. And then to go back to the office and write an op-ed or a letter to the editor and submit it to the local paper. Or now our broadcast media are having, you know, these little 30-second editorials. Mm-hmm. Go to the station and tape a broad or do a podcast like you're doing here. Huge. Millennials listen to podcasts.
Yeah.
And old guys like me, you know, need to get with the program. Do access social media.
Yep.
Get a Twitter account. Get a Facebook account and start posting. Mm-hmm. You have a platform, Pastor, and it's influential.
Yep.
So if we can get pastors and church people to do those things in those two realms, unbelievably influential.
Yeah. Well, certainly a testament to y'all's work and just diligence and passion certainly shows. So
thank you, Christine.
Thank you, Charlie, for joining us today, for all the work that Pastors for Children, Pastors for Texas Children are doing. Certainly are being the hands and feet of God in the world, and we're grateful for that and for the ways that you guys advocate for strong public schools. We're thankful that you're joining us in Washington this week for Public Schools Week, and we have some other events and activities happening this week. Thank you so much.
It's my pleasure. Thank you. God bless the Baptist Joint Committee.
Thank you. And thanks to you, our listeners. Rate the BJC podcast on Apple Podcasts or share the BJC podcast however you listen to it, via Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or Google Podcasts. And as always, be sure to follow us on social media. We're on Twitter at BJC on the Hill and Instagram at Baptist Joint Committee. For more information, visit bjconline.org.